The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It was supposed to just be a meme. That's what everyone at the precinct thought when it first started. All inside jokes to the entertainment of some fringe internet community with macabre senses of humor and too much time on their hands. But then people started dying, and we realized it was something much more. Osyra is something much more. Maybe you've heard that name before, or maybe you haven't. There have been a few accounts of rather unfortunate individuals and their interactions with this being posted to the internet. We thought they were fiction, but the similarities can no longer be ignored. In early 2020, we first became aware of a clandestine internet clique known as the Pupils of Osyra. They seemed pretty asinine. Just an odd community that operated mostly on the hidden part of the internet, known colloquially to most as the Dark Web. Pupils of Osyra. Their acronym literally spells out POO, and the members are all too aware and seem to find a great deal of humor in that. Like I said, it all seemed like just weird kids being weird kids. So maybe you can understand why we didn't exactly take them seriously when we first discovered them. The whole premise of their group seemed to just be worshipping and try to gain the praise of their deity known as Osyra. She was this anime, streamer, internet person that was touted as the goddess of chaos, and her followers dispersed that lore far and wide. The internet is a weird place, and I am a 46-year-old former cop. I won't pretend to understand the nuances and inner workings of those communities the way the younger generation does, and clearly, that was our downfall. The first case linked to its phenomena was during May of 2020. The body of a man was found in a back alley, but his death was unusually gruesome. Rather than just being shot or stabbed, this dude had his skull caved in from an apparent curb stomp. If any of you had seen the movie American History X, it was almost identical to that infamous scene. As it turns out, the victim was a registered sex offender. He spent about a decade in prison after diddling some kid back in 03. I don't exactly have much sympathy for him, if I'm being honest, and clearly whoever executed him didn't either. The crime was sadistic and brutal, in a way that was clearly more than just a robbery or assault gone wrong. Whoever did it wanted to send a message. That message became clear when the video of the murder itself popped up online a few days later. Several different websites uploaded the video, Daily Motion, LiveLeak, Best Gore, and Rotten being among them, all of which removed it after being subpoenaed and threatened with charges for interfering with an ongoing case. I have no doubt that it's still out there, though. After swabbing the scene of the crime and watching that damn video for more times than I can count, we managed to identify a suspect. The man the evidence suggested didn't exactly seem like a likely candidate at first. He was a welder in the oil field, a family man with two young children and a squeaky clean criminal history. He made good money, but had been laying off when the pandemic lockdowns began. Despite that, he seems to be doing just fine financially. He had no relation to the victim's previous victim either, and really didn't seem the type to commit such a ruthless crime. We brought him in for questioning, and were simply dumbfounded when he admitted to the crime with minimal prodding. He appeared almost proud of what he had done, and that really threw us for a loop. When asked why he did it, he simply smiled and gave a cryptic response. Osira decreed it. Me and my partner, Keller, exchanged a confused glance. Who is that? Keller asked. The man chuckled and shook his head. She is life and freedom, love and death, and everything in between. The man refused to elaborate beyond that vague response and showed zero sympathy for his actions. He was a Chomo, so who cares? He said, grinning. Something about his eyes was unnerving to behold. I've interviewed thousands of people accused of all sorts of things, and at this point I'm not easily rattled, but I'd be lying if I said that interaction didn't unsettle me a bit. The look in his eye was like some manic animal, a zealot who felt his actions brought him salvation. It was mostly concerning to us, because, like I said, this guy had absolutely no criminal history beforehand, not even a damn parking ticket on his record. Throughout the entire interrogation, he gave no indication of a motive beyond his initial response. He also vehemently refused to reveal her to us. Keller and I finally gave up about 2 hours later, but before we left, the man gave one final cryptic response. She's watching you. His malicious grin seemed to further elongate when he said it. Keller and I left, now with a distinct feeling that whatever this was, it was only the beginning. Sometime later, we managed to track down the domain in which the pupils operated. Sure enough, that video was on there as well. The other users seemed pleased with it, and congratulated the original poster on a job well done. By this point, we realized we were dealing with some sort of extremist network. Their website was pretty remedial, just a basic forum with users posting text and pictures, reminiscent of 4chan, but with users who went by registered pseudonyms. I managed to engage a user who went by the name of Dunkleosteus on there, and he revealed a few things to me. It was he or she that revealed this Osira was a goddess of chaos, a being from beyond our world who had come to save us. His words, not mine. The users on the forum seemed like an odd mix of internet trolls and religious fanatics, like they had long since huffed their own bullshit and gotten high off the fumes. I hear the word kids use for it nowadays is simp, but these guys took that concept to a whole new level. Our precinct was eventually contacted by the FBI after we made it known that we had discovered their website. They didn't tell us much, but the site was shut down not long after. I voiced my displeasure with that decision, arguing that we could learn more from them. On the other hand, the fact the FBI was suddenly involved meant this thing was much bigger than just one psychopath and one murderer. When they shut down the pupils' website, they didn't scatter the roaches. They just turned off our spotlight. I knew this was a bad decision, and not even a week later, it was proven correct when someone tried planting a pipe bomb near a local prison. Thankfully, it was found and dismantled before going off, and the person responsible was arrested. To our surprise, the wannabe bomber was a young woman in her mid-20s. She worked at a local university as a chemist. We assumed that was how she got her hands on the materials used to create her bomb, but we still didn't understand why. We all had thought the Pupils Forum was mostly a community of young men who were angry with the world and didn't know how to vent their frustrations. But once again, we had to circle back. Both our suspects were rather successful and had a lot to lose by doing what they did. We didn't understand what possessed these otherwise successful and happy people to suddenly commit or attempt to commit such violent crimes. Much to our chagrin, our interview with her didn't tell us much. She altogether refused to give a reason as to why she had done it, and again seemed entirely unconcerned with her own well-being. She didn't even give any indication she had ties with the pupils of Osira, at least until the end. Keller and I gave up after about an hour, and as we were leaving the room, the woman said something which caused us to pause. "Would you like to meet her?" I turned and glared at the woman, not understanding what she was insinuating. "Who?" I asked.
"Osyra,"
she responded simply. I tried to contain my surprise at the mention, but the woman smirked, and I could tell she knew. "You could arrange that?" Keller asked.
"Not you. You're a lost cause,"
the woman snarled back at him, and returned her gaze to me. I didn't understand what she meant by that, and she didn't clarify.
"She'll visit you in your dreams,"
the woman cracked an unnerving smile, and Keller and I just left, believing the woman was insane. By that point, we thought we were dealing with some New Age cult or terrorist network that worshipped some sort of dark goddess, and we didn't really know what to do with that information. They don't teach you much about how to deal with cults in the academy, but we had the feeling we were about to get a crash course. That night, as I was settling in for bed, I found the woman's words echoing in my mind. Of course, I believed she was delusional, and her words were just an empty threat to rattle me. But it worked. I then found myself walking through a forest, confused and disoriented with no memory how I got there. I felt as though I was being watched, and each time I turned my head, I saw shadows scuttle away behind trees. I kept moving away from them, feeling as though they were driving me towards something. Not long after, I arrived at a grove, and was presented with three separate, unnerving sights. All three of them were set out as if they were some macabre theater acts, like they were set up explicitly for me to see. The first showed a young girl tied to a chair, with about a dozen shadowy people around her. Their shoes were bright red, and they wore fine tailored suits, but their faces were concealed with unsettling masks in the likeness of various animals like goats, ravens, and rabbits. The young girl wore a pearly white dress, with a trail of blood running down her chest. Her mouth was gagged, and tears shimmered down her cheeks. To the right of that morbid scene, I saw a field of wilted flowers and crumbling buildings. Piles of burning wreckage and hundreds of corpses littered the fields. A man in a gas mask then entered, tossing a body onto one of the pyres before he looked in my direction. I looked away. There was no blood or gore in the third scene. No inferred child abuse. It was far more subtly unnerving. It was four people. One man, one woman, one girl, and one boy. They wore these gray coveralls, like pajama sets, but without any fancy decorations. They just stood there, staring at me, with faces devoid of emotion, thought, or humanity. All of them then spoke in unison.
"Now we are free."
I backed away, feeling a permeated sense of horror seep into the very fibers of my mind. As disturbing as all these scenes were, when I turned back, I saw something much worse. A young girl, blonde hair and blue eyes, stood behind me. An ornate mask covered her face, but her clothes appeared normal, and even almost familiar. She slowly lifted her hands and removed the mask, and my heart fell to my toes. It was my daughter, Chelsea. I could feel the tears running down my cheeks. I wanted to rush and hug her, but I was frozen in place. She smiled and uttered two simple words.
"Find them."
I lurched up in my bed, soaked with sweat and breathing frantically. I was partially relieved that the horrible things I just witnessed were only a dream, but it was far beyond that. I've had nightmares before. Most people probably have. But that dream was the single most visceral experience I've ever beheld. It was almost as if it wasn't a dream at all, but a vision of a potential eventuality. Chelsea, my beloved daughter, was taken from us almost 12 years ago now. She was at a friend's house when someone abducted her. There was a grueling and frantic investigation, but nothing ever came of it. No one ever found her or even a culprit. And I'll never forgive myself for it. It was the main reason I became a cop, to be honest. And the vision of her seemed more than coincidence. Maybe she's still alive, after all. That anxiety lingered for the rest of that day, and I decided it was well past time to learn more about Osyra. That was easier said than done, though, and I found very little information online anywhere. No mentions of her, no fictional works or excerpts from ancient cursed tomes. A part of me thought I was just being taken for a ride, but another, more prominent part of me, knew those dreams were too significant to be ignored. I fell down a bit of a rabbit hole then, I won't lie, and I spent days following the trail and the things I saw in my dreams. Our police chief wanted to just close the case out, figuring since we had apprehended those responsible that it was over. But I knew it wasn't. I knew that whatever was happening, this was only the beginning. I was proven right about a week later, when a series of videos emerged on the social media platform known as TikTok. The person who posted them was a teenage boy, and he believed he had recorded proof of a poltergeist. The series of videos detailed he and the two of his friends using a Ouija board to try and speak with it. Eventually, it told them its name, Osyra. The three kids asked her a multitude of questions, receiving bizarre and cryptic answers. If what they were told was true, then we can assume that this Osyra, whatever she was, is very old, ancient even. She's demonstrated familiarity with multiple languages and revealed knowledge that others weren't privy to. The last video the kid posted was unlike the others. The video was filled with static and seemed to stutter like an old VCR cassette that had been damaged. Something that shouldn't really happen, considering the kid had presumably recorded the video on his phone. It just showed him filming his dark room, slowly panning back and forth for about 30 seconds as static struck the screen over and over. The kid then spoke in a whisper,
"She needs us."
The video then ended, and the user hadn't posted anything new since. I did some follow-up and made a disturbing discovery not long after. The original video was posted by a kid named Zach, and he and his family had made the news. His brother, Jake, was in police custody, being charged for first-degree assault of a police officer. It was the same Jake who had appeared in Zach's video. I contacted the precinct that had him in custody and got the story from them after I informed them it may be related to another case. Apparently, two of their officers had been called to Jake and Zach's residence after their mother had called for an ambulance for Jake. Jake was apparently catatonic, and they thought he might be having a medical emergency. Zach and his mother greeted the two officers at the door. Then, without warning, Jake suddenly leapt down from the second story. He beat the snot out of one of the officers before being eventually subdued by the other. The officer he attacked is currently comatose, having received a broken jaw, eye socket, losing about a dozen teeth, and suffering severe cranial hemorrhaging from the vicious and seemingly unprompted attack. Doctors aren't sure if he'll ever wake up. Zach had posted his story to the internet. He made the claim that other users on TikTok were claiming to have interacted with Osyra as well. I didn't, and still don't know if all those claims were genuine, but it was too big to ignore. After getting the half-assed approval of my chief, Keller and I flew out to try and interrogate the people involved. Keller wasn't thrilled about it either, and in his mind, this case was already over. Once we landed a few hours later, we went straight to the station where Jake was being held. One of their officers led us into the interrogation room, and soon after, Jake was led in handcuffs. He looked like a normal kid by all accounts, but he had this dazed look in his eye, like his mind was far from the present. It was probably the most pointless interrogation I've ever conducted, because the kid literally didn't say a single word to us, no matter what we asked him. He refused to even make eye contact. I kept wondering whether he had suddenly been afflicted with some mental illness, which I'm sure could account for his violent assaults and lack of communication. Not that it would exonerate him, but checking his records indicated nothing of the sort, aside from mild depression. We soon gave up after realizing he wasn't going to tell us anything, and decided to turn our attention to his brother. We got in touch with him, and he agreed to meet us at a local diner. Since it's a lockdown, we had to eat outside in less than ideal weather, but it was really the only choice we had. Zack arrived a few minutes after we did, and thankfully was much more vocal than his incarcerated brother. He greeted us, but oddly enough, before we could introduce ourselves, he cut us off.
"You're Greg Watkins," he then turned to Keller. "And you're Ben Keller."
It caught me off guard, but I realized I had told him my name over the phone, but I hadn't told him Keller's. He sat down at our table and ordered a coffee, and I decided to just glance over how he knew us already. We asked him to explain exactly what happens to him, and I told him to please give us the truth, no matter how ridiculous it may have seemed. He did exactly that, telling us the story of how he and his two friends communicated with Osyra. Keller didn't seem to be buying it, but I wanted him to continue, even if this was some elaborate ruse.
"Why do you think she chose you?"
I asked. Keller gave me an odd glance, and Zack sighed.
"She knows people. She speaks to the hatred in the hearts of people."
That was not the response I expected, though it got me intrigued. I asked him to elaborate.
"You know you felt it too, when you look around all the atrocities in our world, all the injustice, cruelty, crimes against humanity."
He then looked me dead in the eye, and I felt chills roll down my spine.
"It's the secret desire all people possess. Some ignore it, others kindle it, and others are utterly consumed by it. The desire to just burn it all down and start over, to destroy in order to create. When the system is so completely filled with corruption, it seems like the only thing they can do."
Keller and I exchanged a glance, but said nothing. That was a much more profound and disturbing answer than I anticipated.
"You don't seem like the hateful type," I commented, and Zack shook his head. "I'm really not. I mean, I'm as concerned with the state of the world as anyone, but I don't think violence can be the solution. People have tried that before, and it only leads to more misery."
He trailed off, and I asked him another question.
"Is Jake that way?"
Zack sighed, and seemed hesitant to respond, so I decided to assure him. "Zack, whatever you tell us here will not affect your brother's case in any way. We don't want anyone else to get hurt." Zack then scoffed, like he didn't believe me.
"It's not up to you. People are going to get hurt, people are going to die, and things are going to change."
It almost felt like he was suddenly making a threat, and I almost regretted my previous statement. He then looked me in the eye once more, with a deadpan stare.
"You can't stop Osyra. You can only pick a side."
He then got up, dropped a $5 bill on the table, and left, despite my pleas for him to tell us more. We had nothing to charge him with, so legally, we couldn't keep him there. All we could do was watch him walk off and scratch our heads. Keller and I argued after that, and he refused to believe anything Zack told us was real. He said the kid was just pulling a hoax, or eccentric, and there was no way that any of the Osyra thing was legitimate. Part of me wanted to believe him, but I couldn't ignore the body count. We went back to our hotel, with the intention of flying home the following day. That night, I found myself wondering why Zack even agreed to meet with us if he didn't bother telling us anything. He didn't even try defending his brother, so it didn't make much sense. I then remembered how he knew us before we arrived. It seems as though Osyra chooses her victims, or acolytes, deliberately. And after the dreams I had, I wonder if maybe she'd chosen us as well. I looped back and found myself inspecting the last video Zack had posted on his TikTok. I must have watched that thing a dozen times that night, before something finally clicked.
The static wasn't random. It seemed inserted intentionally at specific intervals, almost like it was trying to send a message. The static reverberated in almost rhythmic patterns, and after writing them down, I began to realize something. This Osira seemed to enjoy riddles and coded messages, and after noting the timestamps on the video and translating the static into binary, I found myself with a series of seemingly nonsensical numbers. It was late into the night when I finally managed to organize them into a pattern that made sense. The resulting findings left me with a series of coordinates and no context. After punching them in, I found the spot indicated was only about a 2-hour drive north. I didn't know what it was leading to, but I knew I had to follow it. Keller was understandably not convinced by my findings. He was the senior of our duo, and had told me that in his years of experience, hunches didn't account for much, and that was essentially all I had. I ended up making him a deal to stick around with me, and begrudgingly, he agreed to go with me. So the two of us evaded our flight home and instead drove 2 hours north. Once we arrived at the spot, I began to feel as though it was all a waste of time, as the area we found was just an empty grove. Since we'd driven all that way, I figured the least we could do was follow the coordinates down to a T. We got out of the car and entered the field, following the map further and further into the grove. Soon enough, we arrived at the exact spot and found a whole lot of nothing. It was just a dirt patch. Keller sighed.
Hey, don't worry about it. Sometimes your gut can be wrong.
He put a hand on my shoulder.
Come on, let's go home.
He turned to leave, and as soon as his foot left the dirt, it disturbed the soil. Something about it was wrong, like in the way the dirt rested. It almost looked as though someone had recently been digging out there. I dropped to the ground and began clawing at the dirt. Keller looked at me like I was a lunatic, but after clearing only a few handfuls, a few strands became visible. Golden threads like some type of hair. I dug away another couple handfuls, and more of it emerged. I then grabbed another handful, and as I pulled it back, I found a face staring back at me. I fell backwards, utterly shocked and horrified by what I'd just found.
Oh shit, I'll get back up. Don't touch anything, Keller barked, breaking into a sprint back to our rental car.
I just stared at the morbid scene, transfixed by terror. A young girl, her body rotted and flesh riddled with worms. Her body dumped in a shallow grave as if it were no more than trash. A forensic team arrived an hour or two later and began the erroneous process of extracting the victim. It only took them a few minutes to realize the young girl wasn't alone in the shallow grave. Over the next 2 days, the team uncovered the remains of at least 26 corpses, all of them children aged between 5 and 16 years old. In all my time as a cop, I'd never seen anything so horrific. The young girl I found turned out to be a 12-year-old who went missing back in 2019. I personally called her father to inform her we'd found his daughter. I don't think I'll ever forget the sound of his sobs when I told him. As horrific as it was, there was something potentially worse. That young girl we found was the same one I'd seen in my dream. I'd bet my life on it. Keller thought the followers of Osira were responsible for it, but that didn't make much sense to me. If it was them, then why would they lead us directly to the victims? Perhaps they wanted to gloat, but that didn't seem to line up with what Osira claimed to be. A goddess of vengeance, a being of chaos. Obviously, cults are known for human sacrifices, but something about it didn't add up. The coroner's report a few weeks later would discover they had all died of the same affliction. Their radial arteries had been slit by a blade in both wrists, along with the carotid artery in their necks. The majority of them also suffered bruising that seemed to indicate sexual battery, but because of the state of their corpses, it was inconclusive. I took the information back to our police chief, expecting him to be equally as disturbed by our discoveries as I was. If I'm allowed to be selfish for a moment, I also expected to be commended for my work, but none of that happened. The chief examined the countless photographs on his desk before, as both Keller and I waited with bated breath. After a few minutes of silence, he finally sighed and removed his glasses.
"I've seen this type of work before."
His response caught me off guard, but I said nothing, hoping he would continue. He looked to Keller, then over to me.
"I need you both to never speak of this again."
Keller and I looked at one another, both in utter bewilderment.
"What? Sir, this case is huge. Someone's abducting and murdering children."
"Yes, I'm aware of that, Officer Watkins."
He cut me off mid-sentence, but I didn't understand. He just remained silent for a moment, as if debating with himself about something which deeply disturbed him.
"Look, I can't tell you everything. I can only say that this is something we were never supposed to find. It must remain a secret."
I shot up from my seat, incensed by his suggestion. I did my best to temper my fury before speaking.
"Sir, with all due respect, that is an absolute travesty. How many parents out there are wondering what happened to their children? Someone is doing this and needs to be stopped. How could there possibly be anything more important than the safety of our kids?"
The chief shot a mournful glance at me, well aware of the tragedy of my daughter and how I had inadvertently inserted myself into the equation.
"Because there are things going on here that you do not understand, that I don't understand. People and things much more powerful than you or I. All I know is what I'm told. And what I'm told is that this incident, and all others like it, never happened. I need both of you to forget it."
I felt my hands clenched into white-knuckled fists as he finished, unable to even believe what he was saying. The biggest case of my entire career by a country mile, and my own police chief was telling me to just pretend it never happened.
"I'm sorry."
I just stared at him as he said it, and I saw it. The look of deep sorrow mixed with a permeated terror that was rife in his expression. The fear was so thick in his demeanor you could practically smell it. I just stormed out of his office after that. He's a coward, and anyone who willingly allows children to suffer, be tortured, and die is no better as far as I'm concerned. Consequences be damned. And screw who or whatever it is that has scared him to silence. It couldn't end there. I wouldn't let it. Keller took our orders far better than I did, and all but forgot about the morbid discovery. On the surface, I did the same, walking and quacking like another federal duck. I never saw any mention of our discovery in the news either, and it simply faded into myth. I never stopped looking into it, though. Weeks went by, and things returned mostly to normal. Keller and I returned to pursuing small-time drug dealers and pimps, while the horrific knowledge of our previous case gnawed endlessly at my mind. I had become obsessed, I'll admit that. But because of the chief's orders, I couldn't even confide in my own partner anymore. I continued having dreams every bit as horrific as my first, but with details far too numerous and intricate to fully describe here. This is already getting long, and I apologize for that, but I've saved the most important discovery for the end. Keller insisted on coming over one night after work to have a few drinks. He'd no doubt sensed me distancing myself, and obviously wanted to let off some steam. I didn't much feel like it, but after his relentless insistence, I finally agreed. Keller prattled on about sports and gossip as we arrived back in my apartment, and I did my best to find interest. I unlocked my apartment door, and the two of us stepped inside. My door seemed looser than normal, and as I closed it behind us, I realized why. There was a man in my apartment, aiming a pistol at us.
"Close the door,"
he commanded. I did as requested. He then motioned to my counter.
"Phones and guns.
try anything funny, and you die. Clearly, he wasn't messing around. He didn't appear to be there to rob me. Keller and I followed instructions. He then ordered us to sit on my couch, and again, we followed. The lights were still off in my apartment, and I only got minimal glimpses of the guy's face under his hood, but I could swear I'd seen him somewhere before. After Keller and I took our seats, he sat in the opposite chair, keeping the pistol aimed towards us. "You weren't supposed to be here tonight, but I can work with that," he said, leering at Keller. "Who are you? What do you want?" Keller asked, as the man flicked on the lamp between us. The moment he did, I realized I knew who he was. "He's Ethan, Zach's missing friend," I answered. Keller glanced worryingly at me, and Ethan smirked. "That's right, though clearly not missing anymore." His smile grew wider as he said it. "I'm going to make this simple, gentlemen. I need the address to Marvin Hoogland." Keller and I exchanged a worried glance.
"The chief? Why?"
Keller asked.
"Because I want to send him flowers,"
Ethan replied, sarcastically, with a deadpan glare. Keller and I remained silent as I tried developing a plan to draw my sidearm, a snub-nosed revolver, my concealed carry. The precinct would have a fit if they knew I always carried it, but they didn't know that. And in that moment, I was never so glad to have it. Ethan chuckled menacingly.
"Strong silent type, huh? How cliche."
He then rose and swiftly slammed his pistol into Keller's cheek. Keller fell onto the floor with a groan, and I seized the chance to draw my sidearm.
"Put the gun down, Ethan," I instructed, aiming at him.
He just shot me a strange glance and scoffed.
"So, you've denied her request." "Put the gun down," I repeated, slowly and clearly.
Ethan then tossed his pistol aside, glaring back at me. Keller got up and grabbed it, then the paper towels from my counter to mop his bloodied mouth.
"Get on your knees, hands on your head,"
Keller barked, aiming the pistol at him. Ethan didn't budge or even look at Keller.
"Yeah, guys, great detective work. Arrest the guy trying to stop the sex trafficking death cult. He's the real threat,"
Ethan quipped, falling to his knees and staring spitefully. His hands lifted to the back of his head, and Keller pulled out his cuffs.
"What do you know about it?" I asked.
Keller shot me a perturbed glance as he secured Ethan's hands.
"I know your boss is covering it up, and maybe others in the precinct are helping him."
He sneered at Keller, and Keller backed off after securing the cuffs.
"You ever ask yourself why, Officer Watkins?"
I said nothing. Keller looked at me, and I hesitated.
"Were the corpses not proof enough for you?"
he asked.
"Did you do it, you sick fuck?" Keller bellowed, but I knew he hadn't.
I knew Ethan was trying to rattle me, but it was working, and his next quip took things to a whole different level.
"Don't you want to know what happened to your daughter?"
The air seemed to drain from the room then. I'd never been so conflicted in all my life, but nothing was more important to me than finding the truth of what happens to Chelsea.
"Greg, don't listen to him. He's full of shit,"
Keller argued, but he was wrong. There was no way Ethan could have known about my daughter, unless someone told him. Ethan stared into the depths of my soul.
"Help us stop them. Help us end it."
Keller then kicked him in the ribs and shouted for him to shut up. I didn't think I'd ever been so conflicted in all my life. The memories of Chelsea swirled in my mind, and my failure anchored me to the spot. I had to know if Ethan was telling the truth, and I had to know whether Keller was with me.
"Why are you so intent on burying this?"
I looked to Keller, and he didn't seem to comprehend.
"Because he's a coward, and he's working to cover it up just like your boss,"
Ethan replied. Keller's look of confusion then turned to outright rage. He stepped towards Ethan, aiming the pistol at his head.
"I've heard enough from you."
Keller wobbled on his feet, eyes vacuous and jaw slacked open.
He fell backwards onto his back, dead, before he struck the ground. Blood spurted from the bullet hole in the side of his skull. I felt the heat emanating from my revolver, and the horror of what I had just done swirled within my mind. Even Ethan appeared shocked by what I'd done. I approached Keller, grabbing the keys from his pocket. I unlocked Ethan's cuffs, and he stood beside me, giving me an odd but approving glance. I grabbed a piece of paper, jotting down a certain address. I then handed it and my revolver to Ethan. He took the paper, and a look of cold determination echoed onto his face. "I believe you have work to do." Ethan simply nodded back and departed without another word. Once again, my sight beheld the grisly demise of Keller. Maybe he didn't deserve to die the way he did, but maybe if he'd been more willing to help, he'd still be alive. As I questioned myself, I saw something watching me from out the window. An ill-defined form with multiple drifting appendages, like an octopus comprised of shadow. It was a sight that would have been enough to terrify the hardest of people. But I was not afraid. I knew it was her, the one who brought about the meeting, and the best chance I had to find out what happened to my daughter, Osyra. I turned away, grabbing my phone from the counter as she whispered, cackling and hissing from the darkness. She was clearly quite impressed with my newfound devotion. I don't think I'll ever comprehend what she truly is, but the only thing that matters now is that I call her an ally. I dialed the dispatch on my phone, contemplating my next move as I waited for the call to be answered. A moment later, it was, and a determined smirk crossed my lips. "Officer down,"